Good evening. You are listening to The Talking Show on Ka-Chung Radio, Chinatown's only micro-broadcasting radio station. I'm Nicholas Miller. That right there is Steve Cato. And we have a rare guest in the studio tonight, Chiquita. Can you say hi, Chiquita?
Yeah.
She's, you know.
Oh, suddenly shy.
Yeah, only talks when not spoken to. Oh, that was something.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Chiquita's here in the studio.
The new Ka-Chung mascot.
Yeah. We apologize for the sonic interventions, the feline sonic interventions. I actually put the Ka-Chung heater over in the other corner of the studio, hoping Chiquita would be attracted to it on this cold, damp night. But she won't go anywhere near it.
Oh, weird. I know. It's like, it has like a fan in it. So my guess, because I know my own cats do not like love to hear fans or mechanical sounds in general. So I feel like maybe it just like makes a really unpleasant sound.
That's true. Yeah. Our friend of the show and hopefully future guest and audio expert Micah Silver told me once that cats hear much higher frequencies than we do.
Yeah.
Which is why one of the reasons they hate the driving in the car so much is because it probably sounds completely nuts to them. Like just these high pitched squealings the entire time.
Yeah. 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 I mean, my own long-time listeners will have heard the story about us moving my cat Jeff back from Austin, who did hate the car, but who also vigorously hated the airplane, which I think is probably a different but similar kind of torture.
What do you think it sounds like to them, Steve?
Well, you know, the funny thing is that, like, I think, you know, there's a lot of pretty high pressure, high frequencies that we hear when we get in a commercial airliner, right? And you just kind of stop noticing it because it becomes like the ambient background material. But, you know, you'll notice that like when you're on a flight, your headphones have to be turned up pretty loud to block out the sound beyond. So if you just added more high range on top of that, which I don't doubt is there, physically speaking, it must sound insane on an airplane.
Yeah. I mean, I have a pair of noise-canceling headphones, which have really decreased my anxiety on planes because I am a pretty anxious flyer.
That's what people use them for. Yeah. You're an anxious flyer?
Yeah.
It's because you know pilots and you're just like, I don't trust them. I don't know. Is that why?
I mean, who's not anxious about their father's profession?
All right, my father being an economist, I to be fair, I don't put a lot of faith in economists, but I'm not like anxious, you know, like I'm not like, I don't know. I don't think I would characterize like the economy, broadly speaking, as like a locus of anxiety for me, you know, in the sense that like, of course, everyone worries about like their own personal finance or whatever, but that's not.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what will the Fed raise interest rates? Like, I have such minimal investments in the global economic system that, like, I can hardly see how it would really affect me, you know? Like, well, I could hardly make less money.
That's between you and your therapist, Steve. But when I'm on the plane, I put the noise-canceling headphones on to calm myself down. But then I feel a little guilty at how calm I am. So I blast Lou Reed's Metal Machine music to kind of balance out the experience.
Yeah, to fill it back out.
But then at least I'm being made anxious by, you know, someone's musical pursuits rather than a grinding machine.
I guess I'm just surprised that you were nervous. Like, because I personally am a... the most anxiety I've experienced on a flight was when I was flying with food poisoning and my body was rebelling against, you know, like it's changes in pressure and stuff like that are usually not that controversial to me physically as an organ. I know to some people it's like, it's quite painful or very unsettling, but you know, I'm a pretty insensitive machine. So it's like, usually I can sort of get away with just like, you know, I kind of enjoy it. You know, it's like time out. I can watch a shitty movie without guilt. You know, I don't have to feel like I'm doing something else because I'm stuck in an airplane, you know. It's usually pretty nice. Like the worst part is the airport. Yeah. I have a lot more anxiety about the airport and like the border guards and stuff than I ever do about the airplane ride itself. But then again, you know, it's like, it's funny. I guess I also have very little anxiety about going to the hospital or going to the dentist. Which are things that, you know, I'm not poo-pooing you for having. Many people are nervous flyers. You know, many do not like going to the dentist. Many, you know, I understand that this is, you know, quite common. But I just, I kind of, I would have assumed that like, you're, you know, what is it? What do they call it when you're exposed to something?
Exposure therapy.
Repeatedly. Yeah, like your exposure therapy of also being able to like fly kind of ad libitum, you know, for most of your young life, you know, especially like your 20s, you know, like you could just get in an airplane pretty much, right?
Yeah.
Like,
but
as a perk of being the son of a pilot.
I think statistically you have a great chance of surviving any given flight. But
That's it.
But most people aren't regaled on a frequent basis of all the things that can go wrong and do in fact go wrong.
Right. And that you're like your father himself prevented from happening.
Yeah. And you know, one wrong move. Yeah. And you know, as he used to say, the 300 people attached to my ass would die. Which is quite an image, you know, quite an image.
Yeah. I can see how that would be different.
My father was also he was on the National Travel Security Bureau, who has like a, you know, they've got like a
NTSB.
Yeah. Who has like one of those great, like FBI looking hats. I don't know what typeface that is. But you know, like just, dark blue with white type NTSB. He was just a pilot. I think an American Airlines pilot. When people are in a profession for
like a liaison.
No, there's another word for it when you've been in a profession for a long time and you're basically retired and they hire you back just to like, you know, make sure.
Emeritus or
consultant.
Yeah. Okay.
Which just means like don't let the younger employees screw this up. And so he would go to all the American crashes, like that one in Little Rock.
Oh, are you kidding?
No. Yeah, so then I got all the great details of like...
Yeah, he's like, this guy's head's hanging off, and the seats were spread all over.
Oh, yeah.
And the farthest seat was like about 2 miles away, if you can believe the debris trail, you know, like, and you're just like, thanks, Dad.
And he loves saying things like, the biggest part of him we found was his thumb. And you're like, I don't need to ever hear that.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, like,
but now this is recorded. Everyone's going to hear this forever.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah.
Sorry, Mark. So
I guess. Yeah. And Andy, I guess maybe sometimes this guy, Andy, listens to the talking show.
Sorry, Andy.
What's up, Andy?
Hey.
Hey, how you doing?
Sorry for ruining air travel for you.
But no, you know, it's like, I'm not going to say that feeling anxious or not is a choice, because that's not fair to people. But I think that's not like, to hear such a thing, that's not the only possible response. You know, having heard this, I don't think I'm going to... for example, I don't know why this is, but in terms of nonfiction reading, I love to read about terrorism.
Okay.
Because it's interesting. You know, there's like groups of like highly motivated groups of people, you know, doing weird things, right? Like Mike Davis wrote that book on the history of the car bomb. And in the 1970s, there was like airplane hijacking left, right, and center. And people were, you know, so there was like a group of sort of radical Serbian nationalists based out of Chicago who just continued to hijack airplanes, trying to like, somehow use that to bring down or raise awareness of their opposition to the Yugoslav state, you know? Things like that. So it's like, just like I for entertainment, I think about this stuff all the time. And to be fair, these are the subjects of action movies, right? Like this is what, you know, Con Air or the first scene of The Dark Knight Rises are. You know, it's like this is the kind of stuff that like we watch the movies because it's interesting, you know. And for better or for worse, truth is stranger than fiction. People have done all of this stuff. You know, people did 9/11. You know,
and my dad went there.
I think, Oh my God!
But it turned out that
jeez Louise,
that was, I think that you know, like the NTSB called and were like, "We're putting you on a private plane to New York," and then got there and were like, "Yeah, this is a little bit bigger than the NTSB." So my dad actually flew from Dallas to Manhattan, you know, when no one was allowed to fly.
Yeah.
And
oh my God!
And then was like there, and the towers had already fallen at that point.
Sure.
And then
wait, but he was in the air when like it was happening, not like because it didn't take long.
No, it was like
to happen.
Yeah, they hit the towers, and then you know they're like,
and then they were like, they got your dad on a plane.
Yeah, because they grounded all air travel in the U.S.
Yeah, like I remember that. Yeah,
and they were like, we don't know what the hell is going on. How many more of these could happen?
Yeah.
So, but he got on a private plane with a few other like FBI people, things like this. He's very proud of this story and then flew out there.
Yeah.
But then, you know, of course they got to like ground zero and were like, oh, this is, we don't need you. go get us coffee, kid.
This is not pilot error, yeah. You know, like
this is actually pilot success, unfortunately.
Yeah. So the pilots changed midway through and then exactly. Represents. Yeah.
This is a staffing problem.
100% of, '9/11 was a huge HR oopsie for the airline staffing scenario. Yeah, amazing.
Speaking of the cold detachment of objective thinking, I have a physics text. I have a physics text on like the theory of cutting. And, and it's just called cutting.
You showed me this book.
Yeah. And, you know, it's all about, like, what happens, basically, like, how are materials separated? Like, you know, the prevailing method is, like, take something harder, grind it to a sharp point, put it through the material. That's, like, the main idea. But there are lots of ways you can cut and different results. But then the final chapter is, like, a case study, and it's actually called September 11th as a cutting problem. And just, like, goes through the physics of, like, here's why planes are so good at cutting buildings in half.
Wow.
And you're like, wow, you really should have chosen a different case study. Like, you know.
No, you know what?
How to separate, you know, like donuts or something. I don't know.
No, I think to be fair, it's like one of those things that you're going to end up debating someone about. No one's going to. You're not going, you know, like you go out to the desert fairly often, you know, and it used to be more like this before. The crystal and natural wine stores all settled in out there. But, you know, it's like one of those things where you go to the desert, you go to the bar, the guy sitting next to you wants to talk about, you know, what's really going on out there, quote unquote. And he's like, you know, and this guy hasn't read any physics textbooks, you know,
no,
he's just
true.
Like telling you how jet fuel can't melt steel beams or whatever.
And oh, yeah, fair enough.
Well, it's actually a cutting problem.
Yeah.
And and here's how it works.
Yeah.
And you're never going to get in that discussion, and you're never going to get out of that discussion about donuts. You know what I mean?
Like, true.
No one's going to engage you that way, and you're not going to need a science-based solution to exit the conversation about donuts. People are like, I like to cut them this way. You're like, well, you know, I like to cut them that way. And they're like a bagel? That's weird. But like...
No, it's true. And
if
I remember correctly, the kind of angle of the text was, you know, to dispel these ideas that it was an inside job, blah, 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 but also to help prepare, you know, future architects to design buildings so that they're harder to cut.
With planes.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's a cottage industry.
This is one of those things where, for sure, I think people should analyze how this stuff happened. Like, I think, you know, whatever, it is like a large traumatic event in my lived memory. And I'm obviously still interested in it. Otherwise, I wouldn't be, you know, talking about it. I'm happy to know about how it was a cutting problem. But I would say that the idea that then you should design buildings to be like airplane proof. So what, the airplane just bounces off or something like that? Or like,
I
is
think
repelled
that it doesn't collapse
somehow.
No, that it doesn't, the building doesn't collapse. It doesn't cut through whatever fundamental structures are in place to keep the building erect.
I would say a better solution would be to just modify the nation's foreign policy yeah, to avoid having when Saudi allies fund terrorists to crash planes into your building.
Yeah, this is not how science approaches social problems. Build a stronger building, like, and keep pummeling them with horrible policies.
You know, it's like I would say that there are, you know, no one forced Muhammad Atta to fly the plane into a building. However, there were contributing factors to his decision to do that, because most people don't do that, you know.
Statistically,
most people are not motivated that way.
Statistically, people pursue other things.
Yeah, broadly speaking, I've lived my whole life without ever doing that, and I can't imagine a situation where I would.
Yeah.
So, I would say maybe there are other factors if we want to prevent future 9/11s that could be pursued meaningfully, and then we could keep building buildings to endure things like wind and, you know, the weight of gravity and, you know, various other kinds of things that, like, I think a building should be devoted to, you know, unlike all those buildings in Turkey, for example, you know, like buildings that can do their job and stay up just under sort of predictable natural threats.
Yeah.
But anywho, wow. Well, it is, you know, it's interesting though, you know, like to talk about what constitutes belief. You know, like in this hypothetical situation where like 5 years ago, 8 years ago, you're in the desert when there were still weirdos living there and not just people from Silver Lake. You're in the desert and there's like some sort of militia person you're talking to at the Palms. You know, do you think if you were like, no, hold on, let me, I've got my backpack right here. Look, this is here's how it works. Yeah. And do you think that would be a compelling argument?
This is the epsilon. This is the epsilon value of the building.
Yeah. This is the K factor of steel,
and this is the velocity and approach angle. And look, it's kind of just like a warm knife through butter.
Do you think that like that would be that would change his feelings? Because also, like, ultimately, right, the conspiracist desire to tie this back. This is, listeners are going to be so impressed by this, but you know, again, also being extremely interested in like wacko conspiracy stuff, because it's just interesting what people can come up with. I think most of that stuff is generated itself out of anxiety, you know, and an unreasonable anxiety, perhaps in the most prosperous country in the world of you know, secret forces working to deprive you of these things. Because, like, you know, who benefits from any of this stuff really happening? And I would argue that there's like things like political economy that can show you who benefits in pretty clear terms from lots of the nefarious doings on in society. You can see pretty clearly why some things are the way they are. But, you know, other people want to believe that it was like the Freemasons or something like that, who, you know, like whatever this hypothetical person's beliefs are. Was it the Greys? Was it the Freemasons? Was it, you know, more reasonably, you know, Dick Cheney, how can we guess who the sort of target of someone else's irrational anxiety would be? Just like how, you know, in intellectual terms, you know that to fly in an airplane is very safe, but through exposure to like only the worst stories about air travel, you feel less secure. You know?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Well, I think maybe the physics cutting text approach with this, you know, this person at the Palms may not gain too much traction. I think perhaps our guest tonight can help us with another angle, a more spiritual angle to convincing people of how reality actually is. So I don't know a ton about Eastern philosophy, Eastern spirituality. So we've invited a former guest of the show back out tonight to kind of host an interview our illustrious guest. So everyone put your hands together for Willem de Ridder interviewing UG Krishnamurti.
Enlightenment, the enlightenment of the cigar?
Yeah, the enlightenment. We start with the enlightenment.
Better chance that way.
Huh?
Better chance.
Yeah, better chance for enlightenment.
I read in the New York Times front page news, you don't have to smoke anymore. Just eat tomatoes, potatoes and aubergines. They have enough nicotine in them, it seems.
So you can get cancer just by eating them?
Cancer, no. The holy men get cancer, you know that. You know. Both sages and saints die of cancer. As a matter of fact, I asked my friend, who happens to be the top film director, if I die of any other cause, please see that my death certificate carries the cause of my death, cancer. Otherwise, I will not be recognized by posterity as a spiritual teacher.
Yeah.
So he said, that's no problem. You can have the certificate.
Is that
just Mr. Bhatt, isn't it? Mr. Bhatt. Yes, it's my biography.
Yeah, I've seen
it. Het is weer zover, zoals je hoort.
He is now the top
zijn we nu druk bezig met HDTV. Heilige Duivel Televisie. En je valt er midden in, zoals je weet. En je valt op een gegeven moment ook weer uit. Zo gaat het altijd. Een uur lang praten we hier in dit bedrijf. Met het bedrijf van het leven natuurlijk. Dat begrijp je, want we houden ons alleen maar met het leven bezig natuurlijk. De rest doet er niet zoveel toe. En het leven, daar hoort een goede sigaar bij, dat begrijp je. En HDTV, je weet wat het betekent, is Heilige Duivel Televisie. En een van die heilige duivels hebben we hier op bezoek. Zijn naam is UG. Ik heb geen idee wat UNG betekent, misschien. Ja, wie weet. Krishnamurti. En UG Krishnamurti is net uit Bombay aangekomen. Hier in Nederland. Hij blijft dan een weekje wat rondkijken en zo. Niet dat hij lezingen houdt of zo, dat doet hij niet aan. Hij heeft ook nooit boeken geschreven. En toch zijn er heel wat boeken over hem uitgekomen. En zijn er aardig wat mensen die als hij dan ergens thuis zit langskomen en hem vragen stellen. Meestal zegt hij van, ga maar weg, want je weet je antwoord toch wel. En er worden heel wat van deze vragen die dan beantwoord worden, of eigenlijk zijn het geen antwoorden, worden dan getaped. Zoals dit hier ook weer getaped wordt. En dit wordt dan uitgeschreven. Het komt dan in de vorm van boeken uit. Hij zal ze nooit lezen. Hij vraagt er geen geld voor. Hij wil er allemaal niets mee te maken hebben. Hij zegt dat hele denken is een neurologisch defect van het lichaam. Precies. UG Krishnamurti. Hij zit ook nog hier. En hier zit hij aan mijn bureau. Is op bezoek in mijn directiekantoor, zoals je ziet. En Heilige Duivel Televisie is er elke week. En deze week duurde het zoals vanouds weer een uur. UG, thank you very much for visiting me here in my office. And it's a little difficult to ask you a question. Because if I ask you a question, you immediately tell me that I know the answer already. So most questions that people ask, especially nowadays, especially here in the West, is what does it all mean? Who are we? Is this all there is? Is this what life is all about? What a mess. How can I become better? These questions you hear a lot.
Not only the questions which you are asking, but even ordinary questions spring from the answers they already have. For example, a mathematician teaches mathematics to his students. He already knows the answer. From that, he creates a problem for you and then make you feel that you are trying to solve the problem, which already answered by him. Otherwise, you cannot ask any questions. And all questions are born out of the answers we already have. And the question which you posed is no different from any other questions we ask. How is the weather? Even that, you see, is born out of the assumption that the weather should be like this. You see. So we assume that there is some purpose, some meaning in our existence. That is born out of the assumption that there should be some meaning, some purpose in our lives. And why should there be any meaning? Why? and we are fed up with the way we are living. We are tired, bored with our day-to-day life. And so naturally we ask the question, is that all? There must be something more interesting, more meaningful, more purposeful than what we are doing. And that's the reason why we ask this question. Nobody knows a thing about life. What is life? You know, it's the most difficult thing to understand. And we are only interested in living and not life. Nobody knows a thing about life. Even the scientists who are trying to understand what life is, the origin of life on this planet, and the age of the universe, and why they are interested in, you see, how is that the information that the universe is 40 billion years old is going to help us in our day-to-day existence. And surprisingly, you see, I find that more and more people in the West are getting interested in this kind of a thing. That's why they are importing all kinds of things from India, from Japan, from everywhere, because you have everything that you can reasonably ask for. You are living a very comfortable life. And naturally the question arises, is that all? So that's all I say. And the idea that you should have some meaning, some purpose in your life is the one that has created the demand. And we have created a market for that kind of a thing. And so when once you have a market, there is always somebody who is trying to sell all kinds of ideas. You see, this is the meaning, this is the purpose. And also in our relationship with our fellow beings, with our partners in our life, in a business management, with the bosses, with the people who are working with you, you have an idea that this is the way it should function, that this is the way our relationship should be. And so we naturally ask the question, the harmonious way of living. Why should there be a harmony? The idea that you should live in harmony with the people you are living with the people around you, with the world around you, is the one that has created the demand for a strange kind of creating a harmony. There is already harmony in this world. That makes it difficult for us to look at the problem and deal with it exactly the way it is. The idea that we should live in harmony is the one that destroys the harmony that is already there, or make it difficult for us to live in harmony, because that's the model we have placed before ourselves. And the demand to fit ourselves into the model is the cause of our misery.
So if we say we should love one another?
The one thing that is attracting my attention when I go around in the city is the poster of that movie, Love, Cheat and Steal.
Love, Cheat and Steal.
It's a very attractive movie, I think. I haven't seen that movie, and I don't see the movies these days. And they're all the same. You see, cheating and stealing and loving to cover up that. You see, it's a very fancy way of covering up our cheating and stealing. Because the law is on the side of those who want to protect what they have already stolen. You see? And we have grabbed everything that is there on this planet for ourselves. And we want to protect what we have grabbed and what actually belongs to everybody. See, on this planet, there is enough for everybody. So you have to protect yourself, what you have stolen, if I may use that word. You may not like, and your views may not like, when I say that we are all thieves, we have stolen everything that belongs to everybody. So we have created a police system. If they cannot protect us, we have an army. If the army cannot, we have created atom bombs. And there is no way you can continue that way at all. Let me emphasize one thing. There is no way you can win the war against terrorists and the war against drugs. These are two powerful movements in this world. You can have all the destructive weapons in your arsenal, but there will come a time when you will not be able to defend yourself. I am not a pessimist. You can pat on your backs and tell yourself and everybody that God is in four heavens and all is right with the world. there was a time when I never thought that the British Empire would come to an end, even at the time of my grandson and great-grandson. Where is that British Empire? So, okay, everything will be all right. We can stay on the top of the world all the time. That's just a myth, you see. One day, everything is going to collapse. Yeah, I'm not a prophet. I'm not like the Jehovah Witnesses talking of Armageddon or whatever you want to call it. But everything that is there in this world is changing, constantly changing. We talk of a change, but when the time comes for a change, we are not ready for the change. It's change is always for the better. I don't want to talk, you see. You have to. This is supposed to be an interview, and you have to ask some questions. And you know, the other day I watched a documentary on Channel 4 in England. Their documentaries are very good. On Red Mercury. We read about that Red Mercury in the newspapers years and years ago. Everybody poo-pooed that there is no such thing as Red Mercury. The only thing that we have is the Mercury. And it hinted, you see, the Russians did tremendous research in that, and the Americans also got the whole stuff. And there will come a time when you will be able to carry a nuclear weapon the size of a ballpoint pen. Oh, see, that's going to happen, you see. And so, what are we going to do? And your belief in God, your belief in divinity, your belief in cosmic power, why should God be on your side if there is a God?
Now, we have, of course, quite a strong religion. We have a Judeo-Christian religion here in the West,
yes,
with a big Bible telling us pretty much how life works, yeah, or supposed to work, and that we have some questions that we cannot answer, but you should believe those in order to be saved and to end up in heaven. So what is this all about?
As you pointed out, it's a belief. You see, you mm-hmm. cannot live without belief. The assumption that you and belief are two things, or the belief is separate from you, is the one thing that is responsible for believing in something, and when that belief doesn't work, you replace that with another belief. See, you cannot be without belief at all. You have to replace one belief with another belief. When once you are disillusioned with the beliefs that you are already caught up in, you import this stuff from outside. You see, you may lose faith in God, and then you see you import the things from there, the Brahman, this, that, and the other. And
Buddha.
Buddhism from outside.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you learn a new language instead of speaking simple Dutch or English. You begin to indulge in some Sanskrit phrases, feel important. See, that's all. They are all empty words and empty phrases. There is nothing. What has not helped those countries is not going to help you here. But we are not ready to face the situation that the things have gone too far and there is no way you can reverse it. So, as you said, I'm not saying anything against Judo. Whatever you want to call
the Judeo-Christian belief.
That has made us believe that the human species is created for a nobler and grander purpose than all the species on this planet. And not only that, you see, we are made to believe that everything there in the universe is for the benefit of humankind.
The crown of creation we are.
That is why we have created all these problems in this world, the ecological problems. Everything you discover in nature, you use them for destructive purposes. The progress that we are very proud of is really not a progress at all. We are progressively moving in the direction of destroying ourselves and destroying everything on this planet. Planet is not in danger. You know, you have programs in the United States and other countries, the planet is in danger. That is just a media hype. The next day,
we are in danger.
We are in danger. And is there anything that we can do to stop that? You may say that I'm a pessimist, but you are a cynic. You are this, that, and the other. But I think we have gone too far. There is no way we can reverse the whole thing. and enjoy what is there, and then go very gracefully. And some of these books, like the history of the future, and so many books, I don't know, I haven't met any of them. They refer to me as the prophet of doom, prophet of despair, and quote me extensively. Even in some book, The Wonder of Childhood, every chapter carries a quotation from the man called Ryuji. I don't know, I haven't even met them. But, you know, when you say that God is irrelevant, it's easy for the listener to say that he's an atheist, that he's an agnostic, or they put so many labels on me, call me anti-guru, they call me nihilist, they call me this, that, and the other. That's an easy way out for them. So when I say God is irrelevant, you have to call me an atheist or an agnostic, but even an atheist is involved with God. And he wants to free people from the belief in God. And so he has created an organization to free people from God. Whether you do it on an individual level or on a collective basis, it's the same. You see, you're still involved with the belief in God, whether God exists or not.
Yeah.
That is not really the question, you see. I have always quoted, I rarely quote anything because I'm not a learned man, I'm an illiterate in many ways. See, if you want anybody to believe in God, show him that God can make you like. And if we are the examples of believers in God, we are in great trouble, you see. So if God needs your help and my help, it's something wrong. And so we better leave God alone. And he does not need our help. And we have created the mess, or whether he created the mess, if you want to exonerate that God and give him some credit for creating this marvelous world, just give him the credit and leave him alone. Mm. In India, you know, you see, you have only 33 million gods. At that time, there were only 33 million people. So they created 3 million people in their own images, you see. You have only two arms, the God must have 10 arms. You have only one head, he must have. You have only one wife, and the super God must have 8 wives and 16 concubines. 16,000, I think. They don't like what I say. And Yuji, they say, is always a useless guy. So, but they, for some reason, they don't brush me aside and say, he's talking nonsense. But when I say that great heritage you are proud of has created this nation and people like you and me, there's something wrong with it. There's no reason for you to be proud of that great heritage of India. They say, no, you are the one that is the product of that great heritage. With all, in spite of all my disclaimers, they say you are the typical product of that great heritage.
So one of the basic messages of most religions is that, like in Christianity, we are born bad, full of sin,
No.
We have to be baptized in order to become more or less passable, isn't it?
Otherwise, they cannot be in the holy business.
It's a business.
It's a business. Holy business, it's a lot easier to be in holy business than in this real business. If you don't deliver goods, you are out of business.
So that's why we have the business of enlightenment.
See, they can get away without delivering the goods. They promise you so many things, happiness, peace, bliss, beatitude, immensity, God knows what, and we fall for that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And then they get away with that kind of a thing. They make money, you know. Otherwise, is it possible to buy a Rolls-Royce car, 90 of them, 360 Rolls-Royce cars, try and buy one? And we fall for that kind of a thing, you see. And they are all con men. They conned themselves and conned everybody. And the question should arise in you, the basic question, why do I allow myself to be conned? You know? And if there is an answer, you have to find that answer out for yourself and by yourself. So that was my question.
Because I believe I'm not good enough, or I'm bad, or I should be enlightened, I'm in the dark, or...
What will you do with enlightenment?
I don't know.
You set up a holy business.
Yeah.
Easy way to make money. So you can thrive on the gullibility and credulity of the people and make plenty of money. And many of them believe that the world owes a living to them. Why should the world owe a living to them? What for? They claim that they are, you see, enlightened people.
So Jesus Christ was fooling us.
See, this is a Christian land.
That's okay. No.
I don't care. I was there on a program in New Mexico, you know, that is a fundamentalist thing.
Yeah.
And they quoted something about Jesus. I have a lot of nice things to say about all these great spiritual teachers of mankind, you see. And they don't like it, you see.
No.
But anyway, your program probably...
No, but the Pope thinks that Holland is lost for Christianity. We are heathens here now.
We are missions,
in the territory.
There is one country in this world that is taking care of everybody. I am never, never tired of mentioning this to the people. There is one country in this world who takes care of the basic needs of the people. It may be at the expense of this gentleman or her. And if the, what are they there for?
You mean Holland is taking care of?
Sure, yeah. You see, they, all my friends, you see. That's why I'm asking my Dutch friends to adopt me.
Yeah.
So yeah. And how much share we will get out of the money you will get, they're already demanding that. That's a Dutch mind, I suppose. Yeah. I don't know. Percentage they want, you see.
Percentage, yes, yes. We're the middleman to the world, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You see, I have many friends, communist friends. I tell them, you see, there isn't going to be any classless society in this world. That's a dream. It's not going to work, you see, because we are protecting ourselves all the time. You see, the instrument which we use for survival in this world is thought, after all. You see, it is born out of the demand to protect itself. You see, you have created armor around ourselves, and we will do everything possible to protect ourselves. And what you have, I want. What I have, I am not ready to part with. I don't know if your viewers will be interested in this kind of a thing, but anyway, you are a very popular. What's your program? I don't even know what the program is. And
it's called Disneyland. It's called program.
Yes. Yes. But, yeah, I can sit and talk in a very informal and casual way. I have been on television everywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of informality is not possible there. You know, you say anything you like. Sometimes I say something nasty about Buddha in Japan and there. Or Jesus. Jesus cannot walk, swim, so he walked. And the water was only ankle deep. And my interviewer thought that there would be the fundamentalists waiting outside to kill me.
So yeah.
Anyway, what do I have to lose? I have lived 76 years on this planet. I can go.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about that. Nor am I interested in propagating for or against anything. You may very well ask me the question, and many people throw this question at me when I go on television like this. And I'm finishing with my interviews. This is the 19th one, two more.
Two more?
Finished, 21 enough.
Mm.
And then, and so why 21, they ask us. I have some strange faith in seven and multiples of seven. So two more. And
that's your faith.
That's enough. I have done enough mischief. And
yeah.
My friends say that you have not done enough mischief, and so we want you to give more interviews.
Mm.
So they even are interested in making a documentary in India, and even somebody suggested to Channel 4 or something, submitted a proposal that they should make a documentary on UG. Well, how are they going to present me? They will have world of a problem to present me as what? I say, I'm just an ordinary man. And just an ordinary man, you see, that's all. And I am not an anti-guru, I am not a saint, I am not an enlightened man. I am not any of the things you think that I am. But how are you going to present this man, very crude, rude, and he doesn't indulge in saying anything very romantic and, promising something. How are you going to present it? It's very difficult for them to present me. And the Indian television also interested, but when once they invest money in me, you can't say something nasty about India.
No.
And so, and I said, no,
but the most important thing is being ordinary is okay, but being just ordinary is very special.
No, it's very difficult to be ordinary, you see. You know, we have been brainwashed to believe that you cannot be an ordinary man, you see. So we have created a model. And what is that model? The model of those spiritual teachers.
The level.
And you want everybody to fit himself or herself, as the case may be, into that model. That's the cause of our misery, that's the cause of our suffering. Why should you be like Buddha? Why should you be like those spiritual teachers? They existed thousands and thousands of years ago. And what is there is something unique, something extraordinary. There is nobody like you anywhere on this planet. And that living organism, you see, is the result of millions and millions of years of the past. You see, you cannot compare anything with that. You see, unfortunately, the belief that you should be something like that you should not be this, that you should not be that. You see, we are caught up in this. And people ask me these questions. You suggest people to do this and murder, get away. You watch movies full of murder, mayhem, rape. But you don't do anything that you ask people to do. I am not recommending anything. I am not condemning anything, you see. And those who condemn really are not the kind of people that should condemn, you see. If that is operating in their lives, they wouldn't condemn anything. To me, there is no such thing as morality at all. So I can never be moral. So I am not trying to be free from these opposites, good and bad, right and wrong, morality and immorality. I'm just not caught up in that at all.
So as soon as we think we should be good,
then you are bad.
Then you're really bad.
Yes, really bad. The only bad thing comes out because you are going to be good tomorrow. And 10 days after, next year, 10 years after, and the Indians have invented a thing called next life, and always next life. You know, nobody can get enlightenment in the present life, according to the Hindu tradition. Impossible. You have to go through 84 million lives. Even then you have to be born as a cow. No chance. And then you as a Brahmin, the highest caste there. Then you have a chance, maybe. Not in this life. And how come all these people there, the gurus in the marketplace, selling
ideas
that you can be enlightened, you see. Yeah?
So it's our ideas.
According to that tradition, I don't believe in tradition at all, you see. But whatever that word means, such a man, if there is an enlightened man, he is not interested in enlightening anybody else because he does not know that he is an enlightened being. He will never pronounce to the wide world that he's an enlightened man, that he's going to enlighten everybody. This is a marketplace, so there is a demand and supply. That's all there is to it. So you can live in hope one day you are going to be an enlightened man and probably set up holy business like the gurus in the marketplace and make money.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because everybody wants to be better and more and clear and... Yes. Holy.
And it is that is creating the misery for the people. That's all that I am saying, you see. And you are wanting to fit into a framework created by those people, modeled after those teachers, whether they existed or not, I don't know, and I don't care, you see. I have never been interested in that kind of a thing. I read once the student, The Lives of Saints. Catholic saints, 8 volumes, each one as big as the Encyclopedia Britannica. And the writers have tried to fit them into that mold and say all of them from their childhood live exactly the same way the saint is supposed to be, you see, you know. And I give you a personal example, you see, a friend of mine who has been with me for almost 25 years and a great Harikatha man, you see, he gives religious discourses with music, singing, songs. Both of them wanted to give a religious musical discourse on this man called Yogi. They spent 3 months trying to find out one event in my life which could be footed into that beautiful songs. So they gave up.
She gave up?
They gave up. That man was very well known for his musical discourses, religious discourses. He gave discourses on Ramana Maharshi, everybody dead and alive and yet to be born. But every time he gave a discourse, he used to draw 5,000, 6,000, 8,000 people from every walk of life. It's impossible. There is not one event in his life which could be fitted into his saintly life. And
what is stability? How does it matter and where does it come from and how it really gives a feeling of...
That certain. Is an assumption on our part given to us by the scientists that there is a stability here. Everything must be stable. Why should it be stable? It is. We don't know whether there is any stability. We don't know whether there is any order in this universe or chaos. And somebody says there is chaos and he gets a Nobel Prize. Another fellow says that there is order, he gets a Nobel Prize. Now somebody comes along and says that in the same frame there is chaos and there is order. So where do we go from there?
So when we are born, we learn a bunch of stories and basically it's all lies.
The mother first imposes all things on us, first of all. And then that's why I call mothers monsters. I'm sorry, you see.
So we should call it Monster Day.
Yeah, I was on TV Asia program there and one woman was giving birth to a baby and she watched my program. What should I do with my baby? Abandon that baby, I say. And why mothers are monsters? Even my interviewer happened to be a woman. She said, I'm a mother, I have 4 children, you see. I said, all right, mothers are monsters, and the children are no angels, you see. And what about fathers? They don't count at all, you see.
She don't count.
No, you are trying to be funny, but, you know, from the time they are born, you see, the first time a mother kisses the baby, that's the beginning of the end, you see, you know. And you see, we have not come up with any idea how to raise children, you know. I had 4 children, you see, one died and 3 of them are still alive. And I allowed the children to cry until their throats became hoarse and after that they never cried. You see, I said, what are you doing? He said, why do you allow them to cry? Forget it, you see. And so, they are more intelligent than us. We are not ready to accept the fact that the children are more intelligent than us. We cannot handle them. So we impose our fancy ideas and beliefs on them and force them to fit into the framework which we have created. And they also want to be accepted by us. You see, otherwise, how can they survive in this world?
Yes.
There's no way they can survive in this jungle. In the jungle, you see, you can survive, you know. But here we have created a kind of world where you have to be forced to learn things to function in this world. Even if I want to eat some fruits, the trees either belong to an individual or to the state, you see. For example, we have in my place there, up in the hills in India, sandalwood trees. The sandalwood trees, whether they are in your private property or out there, they belong to the government. And so all the thieves come in the night and cut them. And so my landlord suggested, why should they take it away, you see, and then we use sandalwood for our fireplace.
What is emotion in a normal human being's life?
You see, emotion is not different from thought. You see, when you are happy, or you have to tell yourself that you are happy. So, when once you translate any sensation within the framework of the knowledge you have, you have created a problem for yourself. So you push yourself to see that, you see, it acts, you see, you know. But it doesn't operate that way. So all emotions are thoughts. All feelings are thoughts. We are not ready to accept the fact that all feelings are thoughts. You see, you give importance. You know, you must feel good. You see, how do you feel good? I force myself to be kind to somebody. Huh? So that's the reason why I tell people, don't practice kindness, you will have heart attacks. You see, the heart is there only to pump blood. If you force that heart to feel kind, you see, you know, there is a problem for the heart. Hmm? So the living organism is not interested in anything you like, anything you want. So it doesn't want to learn anything from us. It doesn't want to know anything from us. We don't understand this basic thing. We think we know a lot, and we force that body to do things that it is not interested at all. It's not interested in emotions. It is not interested in kindness. So I always give the example, you see, of the cellular structure is a tremendous thing there. And the memory, where is it located? It is not located in any particular area, not in the brain. And all this talk of neurons and all that is absolute rubbish. One of these days they will have to find out, and they are going to find out, that every cell has a memory of its own. There is a cooperation there. You see, not because you have to cooperate with your fellow beings, that you have to love your neighbor as thyself, or that you have to practice brotherhood, but the survival of this cell depends upon the survival of the cell that is next to it. That is the way the jungle life is operating. But we have an idea that you should cooperate, that you should love thy neighbor as thyself. What the hell you are talking about? In the name of love, we have killed more people than all these recent wars put together. So there we are.
Eugene, sexual feeling is also a thought?
Yes, otherwise there is no sex.
But with animals then, they...
Anything you say about the animals, you see, is a speculation on your part, and is a projection on your part. And why do you give the example of animals? What for? The elephants have sex once in 7 years. Why the hell do you have to sex every hour on the hour? Sex, I'm not against sex. Sex has nothing to do with these spiritual matters. By controlling sex, by demanding that you should have sex on a particular day, and somebody said yesterday, there's a school here, school of Shankara, you can have sex once a month, it seems. But according to the Hindu tradition, when once a child is born, that's the end of his sex life, because the wife becomes the mother. You see, only once in your life. So apart from all these fancy ideas, when once thought is used as an instrument of pleasure, and we use that for sexual pleasure, we have created all the problems. So sex has nothing to do with your spiritual achievements are at all. You see, that you can invent a thing called tantric sex, and whether you have sex with a prostitute or with your own mother or your sister, I'm not advocating that. I'm putting it in a very crude language. Then it ceases to be of a problem. You see, man has also a rhythm like the woman. You see, if you allow that to function that way, it becomes a simple thing. You see, you know, there are only two things that this living organism is involved in, concerned about, interested in, that is reproduction and survival. It's not interested in
reproduction and what?
Survival.
And
reproduction.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Nothing else.
Yeah.
And all the ideas that we have, that spiritual things, God, heaven, just forget it. I don't know if it makes any sense.
Yeah, so the it's basically the ideas that cause the problems.
We put ideas in our stomach.
Yeah.
And we wear ideas.
Yeah.
You walk through any of those, that fellow is telling you how you should dress yourself. And the body needs very little food. You see, it needs some energy. And it can create glucose from anything. See, all the talk about proteins, the talk about vitamins is absolute gibberish. I don't believe in all that kind of thing at all. They can say what they like. You see, that's why I say very often, if you believe in the belief that Jesus was born to a virgin, you will believe in anything in this world.
Yeah.
Any commercial that is there on the channel.
Yeah.
What they are selling there in the United States, you have no idea at all. And how can people fall for that? Aerobics, and then you see now the yoga. Yoga is bad for this body because it's not interested in walking at all.
Now in Germany, you have Tai Chi on television.
Yeah, you have to
instead of
import something new. You see, all the time you are fed up with your walking, jogging, and the high priest of jogging dropped dead in the tracks. And you know that macrobiotic diet fellow, what is his name, Ishawa or some fellow?
Osawa.
Osawa.
Mm-hmm.
And he made people believe that if they ate microbiotic food always, they would live forever. While he was giving this discourse at the dining table, he died dead. I'm not joking.
Mm-hmm.
So you believe anything. So where do you go from there?
Many people are now concerned of living forever. Eh? They want to live longer and longer.
That's a battle, that's a war you will never win.
Yeah.
Never. Because the nature is interested only in these bodies and not what you say, what you believe, what you think. Because it is interested in recycling these bodies to maintain the energy level in this universe. Nothing else.
But the people who are looking for purity, what are they trying to achieve?
This is so pure. The idea of impurity is the one that is creating impurity in your mind. If I may use that word, it's a dirty word.
But mind is a crook.
Is a crook.
Yeah, mind is a crook.
Yes, it is. That's why we are all, I'm not including you. The common decency and elementary manners. The present company.
My mind is a crook.
All of us. Wherever there is a mind, it's only interested in that kind of a thing, perpetuating itself until the end when it knows that it cannot. And that's the end of it. It's a
but when we are born, we don't think. We learn to think. It's something learned.
I don't know what thinking exactly is. You know, there are no thoughts there. There is no thinker. There is no thinking. Everything is put in like the computer, you see. It's a computer here. And so you use certain thoughts to achieve a goal. It doesn't matter what the nature of the goal, whether it's a spiritual goal or a materialistic goal, it just really doesn't matter. It's better to be a billionaire than to be, you see, a very, very rich man. I'm not against acquiring riches, but whether it's a materialistic goal or a spiritual goal, it cannot be achieved except through the use of thought, which is matter. So even the spiritual goal is a materialistic goal. You go to the temple and pray. What for? Why should that God, all-merciful God, reward those who pray and punish those who do not pray? Why? Huh? Why do we believe in that kind of a thing? So there it is. That's all.
But isn't praying like a kind of programming for yourself then?
No. It's a comforter, hoping that, you see, through the grace of somebody, that you will achieve your goals.
And you feel better then?
You feel good. You feel good because of the nicotine there. You drink. I'm not against that.
No.
Enjoy it.
I enjoy it, yeah.
Good, why not?
But you say thought is matter.
Meditation is a materialistic thing. It gives materiality to the things. It's a matter, you see. So even if the goal is a spiritual goal, the matter turns that into a materialistic thing. You see, why do I go and pray? What do I want? The material things I want. That is why I pray.
But what is thought then?
Thought doesn't exist. You see, what is supposing you want to know about thought? You want to look at thought. See, what you look at is not thought, but about thought. What we are told about thought is all that you see. Otherwise, there is no thought. Thought also is memory. So I brush aside everything, consciousness totally, because consciousness also is memory. I become conscious of the fact that you are wearing blue jeans and red t-shirt, you see. Otherwise, the physical eye does not see anything, does not see the colors. You would be surprised if you are sitting, there is a tree in front of you, the eye sees only the flatness and not the round thing. So if you see a round tree, it is what we are taught. It's born out of your imagination to look at the tree and say to yourself and to others that that is round is because we have been told, and that knowledge you have about that, you use and you create a round tree. Every time you look at it, you tell yourself and others, the tree is round. But if you are sitting here with no knowledge of what you are looking at, that's not possible for you, because it's all the time it has to translate every sensation to maintain its memory, continuity of memory.
Yeah.
So it's just a simple memory table. It's a sound. You see, so thought is a sound, memory is a sound, knowledge is sound, consciousness is sound, red you say. So when you use that, what happens here is that this, in this sort of an echo chamber here, it repeats itself. That gives you the illusion that there are two things, but actually it is one. You are out there and say hello, and after a few seconds you hear that. In exactly the same way, when this sound is born there, it repeats itself. And that gives you the illusion that there are two things there, but actually it is one.
Many people then realize nowadays that there's something wrong with thinking. So they try to stop thinking by meditation, or try to stop their thoughts, or try to be empty, or try to be here now, you know, on this, in this moment.
You see, all that is bullshit. I'm sorry to... All that is bullshit. I'm sorry to use that strong expression. But, you see, the present. This is the present. You see, if you recognize this as table, if I recognize that as smoke, it's the past that is telling me. So there is no such thing as the present, there is no such thing as now, there is no such thing as this moment. So you are trying to free yourself from thought and put yourself in a thoughtless state. I don't know why. If you are in a thoughtless state for the millionth of a second, you will drop dead, I assure you, I guarantee that. So it is not in your interest to put yourself into a thoughtless state. But one thing that they don't understand is how, through thought, you can put yourself into a thoughtless state. You are using thought. People talk of effortless state. But you are all the time trying to be in an effortless state through effort. You are not going to succeed at all. You may not accept what I am saying. You believe what they have been dishing out for centuries. Why the hell do you want to be in a thoughtless state? That would be the end of you as you know yourself, as you experience yourself. So it is not in your interest to be really in a thoughtless state. What for? They describe that state as the void, what for? You say, how do you know that you are in a void state? Some people come and tell me, I was in a thoughtless state, and they describe that state. How that?
Yeah.
So the thought was very much there.
Yeah. You know.
Otherwise, it cannot tell that it's in a thoughtless state. That state is bliss. That state is love. That state is compassion. So that means something is there. The division is already there. The void. They build a tremendous structure of thought.
Nowadays, it's very popular that people don't talk for themselves, but they receive voices, they channel voices.
Yeah, you can hear your own voices. That means that you are heading that way. And you must be there for, as a permanent resident in the loony bin. They are giving visas there.
Yeah.
The holy men go there. That's what I tell those people who come and tell me that I have meditated. Look here, you have not meditated. If you have really meditated, you would be there in the mental hospital. True. They have not done any meditation. They just talk, you see. It's just like creating peace on this earth through war. How the hell you are going to create peace? As I said at the beginning, 34 wars are going on here. And we were made to believe that the last war was waged, a war to end wars. Has it ended wars? So there is a conflict there. You see, the things are moving that way, you bring it back. And the peace that they claim they have as a result of this meditation is this. Between two wars, you have some peace. So then it starts all over again. So there it is. So they have not really done any meditation, they have not really done any yoga, because yoga, this by torturing this body, you are reversing the natural flow of the energy here. It's not interested in that at all. It's living a very peaceful life, and you have an idea of a peace, and force this whole thing to be in that peaceful state, so it is disturbing the chemistry of the body. So doing good to somebody else makes you feel good. That is what they call the do-gooder's high. And you can start a scout movement and then become a scout and do good unto others. I'm not saying whether you should or should not. I'm just focusing, spotlighting what the situation is. Isn't that enough?
So it means that we literally have to accept whatever happens.
It doesn't mean a thing.
Doesn't mean a thing.
Yeah, I accept, so what? And I still continue to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I accept it. I know that I am a damn fool, but I still continue to be a fool.
Yeah.
So that should put an end to my foolery, tomfoolery. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't, you know. So that is the problem there.
Yeah, but if you accept it in order to get rid of your tomfoolery, then you don't accept it.
Then you replace it with another kind of
yes.
foolery.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's all right. If there is no word, we can coin our own words and get away with that.
So you like parrots, where you're repeating the words that our parents taught us.
To put it very crudely, sir, these are two dogs.
Two dogs.
I am a dog. And whether you accept it or not is irrelevant and immaterial.
That's the second name of God.
It's a reverse spelling.
Yeah.
And so we are taught how to
bark,
make sense out of this barking.
Yeah.
So all languages are the same, exactly the same, you see. So you know how to space the, create the space between two notes. And then it's Dutch and then German, the Italian. Otherwise, if you don't know, there is no way you can make any sense out of this.
No.
But this is a very artificially created structure.
Yeah.
Whereas in the case of dogs and then the parrots, it's something living there.
Yeah.
You see, what they are expressing, we don't know. One of these days, probably, we will understand.
I was hearing the story that in Italy, there were two farmers who left their kids alone with a dog, and the dog was teaching the kid how to bark, and it started barking.
Yes. They learn how to bark.
Yeah, the kids
just
was barking.
They pick up Dutch and then start up to us in Dutch or English or Indian language, as the case may be.
Yeah.
So singing also the same. Finished. Everything is finished.
So what about children who are like raised by wolves or so and become like wolf children?
They are better than the children raised by us.
Yeah.
Yes. They have no problems. They don't have to go to a psychiatrist for analysis. They don't have to go to a church and pray. You see, there it is. So that's it. I don't know if you can make anything out of this. You can?
No, it stops every conversation in its tracks.
You see, one problem.
It's great for a talk show.
Not good for a talk show. You see, because I don't sum up anything. These are all disconnected, disjointed series of statements.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. So it's very difficult to sum up and present to the viewers or the listeners, as the case may be, as something that they can understand and make out something out of this and use it. You see, why do you listen to anything? You listen to the teachers only to learn something and use that to bring about a change in you.
Yeah.
So I am saying all the time, there is nothing there to be changed. Thank you.
There's nothing there to be changed.
Yeah.
So
it runs counter to everything that has been said by everybody before. But I take it or leave it.
Mm.
That's it.
Zo, ja, het is, lijkt me heel duidelijk, geachte kijkers, er valt niets te veranderen. Er is geen enkele mogelijkheid waarop je ook maar iets kunt verbeteren. Of jezelf op een hoger niveau brengen. Of een beter mens worden. of een aantrekkelijker mens, of een liefdevoller mens, of een slechter mens. Het maakt niet uit wat je probeert. Het veroorzaakt bijna altijd rampen, zou je kunnen zeggen. En daar is geen uitweg. Dat is al zo ver, dat heeft zich al zo ver ontwikkeld, dat je kunt proberen wat je wil. Het maakt het alleen maar erg. En sommige mensen die roepen dat het afgelopen is, het zou wel zo kunnen zijn. Niet met de wereld. De wereld is nooit afgelopen. Voorlopig zeker niet. En dat is ook al ons idee. Als het, het kan hooguit afgelopen zijn met ons. Nooit met de planeten, met de bossen, met de lucht. Wat dat betreft heeft de natuur alle tijd in de wereld. Miljoenen jaren. We kunnen nog zo'n puinhoop maken, het wordt allemaal weer keurig opgeruimd. Geen probleem. De enige die ooit problemen kunnen krijgen, jij en ik. Door de ideeën die we geleerd hebben. Dus wat kan ik zeggen? Niks. Ik kan alleen maar zeggen, dit was HDTV. De Heilige Duivel televisie. En Yuji, thank you very much for being here. En jij ook. Hartelijk bedankt voor het kijken. En je weet, volgende week is er weer een HDTV. Tenminste, dat geloof ik. Of niet soms. Dat doet het ook toe. Tot ziens.
Well, that wasn't what I expected. But it became clear. I had to pull out my cellular phone in the middle of it. I thought we were having Jiddu Krishnamurti on the show. It was my mistake, my horrible Western ignorance on these topics, that there'd be two theosophical philosophers from India with the last name Krishnamurti. My apologies. Completely unrelated, other than that they in our contemporaries. And as far as I know, it's somewhat opposing views on some of these things. This is a good question. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it'd be like if you're in India and you're reading about German idealism, and there's like a Hegel who's a materialist and a Hegel who's an idealist, and you're like, wait a second, that's not fair. Yeah, and like, is Hegel a common name? And then they call their friends over here, and we're like, no, not really, not really. Yeah, you are the right parts of Germany, sure. Yeah. Yeah, but I guess it makes sense. You know, I wouldn't expect, you know, the questioning of enlightenment from UG was more in line with Willem's interest, because he was champing at the bit to fly over here and do this interview, which was a little surprising to me. I thought maybe I was like, Willem, did you get into yoga since I knew we talked last? Like, are you meditating? What's going on? Yeah, it's, you know, People search for meaning in all kinds of ways as they age. No, UG's not into yoga. Yeah. cool. Maybe his father was a school teacher. Let's see. I mean, not entirely enlightening, but refreshing to hear a kind of criticisms of the Americanization of all of these things, the kind of turning them into consumer objects, like yoga and whatnot, and these kind of ways in which enlightenment and spiritual relief can be served and purchased at will in this country. Yeah. It's okay. It rings some bells, but they're faint, distant, bells. yeah, but it is a good point to bring up Adorno, another person who came to these shores over here on the West Coast and was kind of shocked at the presence of these things. And, you know, I guess, to be honest, I'm still shocked at how much presence that stuff has. It doesn't feel like, well, I don't know. What do you think? I feel like my understanding of California in the 60s and 70s is that stuff was way more present. But then you go to Santa Monica and you're like, it seems maybe diminished, but I don't know. What do you think? Is it diminished? Utopian communities. Yeah, she was involved. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and then on Los Feliz near Griffith Park, there's that beautiful building that says the Philosophical Society that I looked into and I was like, oh, this is not the way I use that word. Yeah. Oh, no, that's a bank. Willy nilly. Yeah. Right. Sure. Or even like in The Long Goodbye by Robert Altman, it's like his Marlowe's neighbors are like young women who walk around naked doing yoga and making candles and doing drugs and stuff. And maybe that's just more hippies, but I don't know. It seems aligned. Oh, yeah, sure. Of course. Yeah. Yeah, and everyone has video cameras now. That makes it trickier, I imagine. Yeah. 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 Right. Yeah, you got B for interest, go through those doors. Yeah. Sounds fun. Yeah, it's also probably hot in there. Yeah. Yeah, well, that's true. At least we do this in person. It's true. Connecting people across vast distances and times. Latinum discs. True. Yeah, we got all the back stock from the Silicon Valley Bank. They were selling it, you know, pennies on the dollar a few weeks ago. Good morning.